Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going directly into the show tonight. August 20th, 2009, part two of the three-part series talking about misconceptions regarding Planet X, our good friend, and actually the many Planet X-type objects, as I always say, because there's not just one of these, there are many. And so that's part of the topic tonight, to discuss the ramifications of the many Planet X's, but also the misconceptions, because with the internet, with disinformation crews working diligently to keep the public fooled, there is a lot of misinformation. So this mini-series is meant to clarify a lot of those topics. And initially, this past week, this is just going to give you an example of the type of misinformation that is constantly being thrown at the public. I've got some news announcements here. And these are all very related about, say, asteroid searches, or what I call Tier 2 science. Some of it good science, but not the whole story, and that's the point. Some of it also not very good science, issues dealing with, for example, the Big Bang. And I have to warn you, some of you may need a seatbelt tonight, because when you hear some of the stories that came out this past week, I was like, when I read these, I nearly fell off my chair, and I know you will too. So you may want to find a seatbelt to hold yourself securely in your chair while you listen to some of this ridiculous science that has been thrown at the public this past week. But first of all, a couple quick announcements, and also welcome all the new listeners. Every week there are more and more people listen to this radio show. It is aired worldwide. Of course, WWCR out of Nashville, being a worldwide broadcasting station, also available on the internet. And remember, additionally, besides the live show tonight, this show re-airs twice in the next 24 hours, also out of WWCR Tower 4, and also on Galaxy 25, satellite radio. And, of course, all of the radio shows are archived. 2 hours after the live broadcast, it airs on RealityRadioNetwork.com, which is an internet feed, and also that's worldwide. And also they archive the current radio shows, but you can find the years, years and years, all of a sudden a frog in my throat. Years and years of radio shows are on my webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And you can listen, and of course, about 3.5 gigabytes of information on that webpage. A couple quick announcements here. This one I tried to get in a couple weeks ago, but I finally had to pull it out for this show. There was a CNN article by a guy named Jack Cafferty, one of their authors, one of their writers. Excuse me. I'm sorry about the frog in the throat here. But this is regarding organic food. Now, listen to this. This is one of the things that I just about screamed with laughter when I read this, claiming that a study by the British government showed that organic food is no healthier than regular food. Now, when I saw regular food implying the GMO, genetically modified food, food with chemicals, food with preservatives, and they're calling that regular food, I just about fell over, in implying that this organic food is, you know, that's that new crazy organic food, compared to regular food, which is the good food with the chemicals in it. 50,000 studies, they claim, trying to convince you that organic food is not better than regular food. So I just can't believe they think people are going to read this. This is why the standard news media is losing ground every day. People just don't read it anymore. They don't buy it. All of the propaganda, whether it's the National Health service that they want to impose on you. And by the way, just from talking to people, all of the news media hype about this national health program is misguided. People just don't want the government in their health, period. That's all it amounts to. The government has messed up everything it has put its little fingers on, and this will be one of the worst messes you could ever imagine. So that's the simple end of it. People just don't want government involved in their health lives. So at any rate, on to the next topic, which actually involves more government intrusion into medical areas. They're calling the alleged H1N1 novel flu or swine flu, they're now calling it the idiot flu. And I like that name. I always like, people on the internet come up with these catchphrases. And the whole point is that anybody who believes what they're saying about the swine flu is an idiot. There's no basis for it. There's no scientific basis that there ever was a swine flu, and or that it will reemerge as some kind of worldwide disaster of some kind. And of course, they want everybody to take a shot. And if you have a lot of talk show hosts are covering this topic, so I'm not going to go into it. But I just wanted to quote this. Her name is Kathleen Sebelius, Health and Human Services Secretary under Obama. And she came out with a statement which I thought was bizarre. They're trying to get schools to be great partners, they call them, in vaccination schedules for kids. And parents, you better let the schools know that they better not be vaccinating your kid in school. That is not the place for medical programs, government medical programs, to be carried out. But then she says this is a children's flu. Well, the children's flu or the swine flu hasn't even started. As I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but this is the most ridiculous political ploy that I have seen or heard of in my life. But the other thing is that they are trying to force pregnant women to take this untested shot, a shot, the type of shots that have killed and paralyzed people in the past, and they're trying to get women that are pregnant to take this shot as the first group of people that they want to have the shot administered to. So at any rate, tell people that this is an untested shot, and to resist it, because this is not something the government should be involved in, should not be paying for, and should not be administering it through their Department of Health and Human Services, especially trying to coerce schools into giving it to school kids when they're away from their parents. And just a little bit on the lighter side, a little political humor here. Apparently there's some misunderstanding of the over the age of our alleged President Obama. And anyway, apparently there are every age from 48 or 47 to 52. And so I decided to have the Obama sweepstakes. Now, I've always wanted to have a sweepstakes where everybody is a winner. So I decided to have a sweepstakes where it's called the Guess the President Obama Age Sweepstakes. And everybody's a winner because there is no right answer, apparently. On to the next topic. I want to include a topic dealing with meteor streams and how the plasma discharge comet model explains the existence of meteor streams. And that weighs heavily into the topic of Planet X. But first, I promised you some articles that came out this past week in the science news media, the kind of things they throw off on the public. Now, here's where you're going to need your seatbelt, or at least to contain yourself laughing. The Big Bang, we've all heard about that. The explosion that allegedly occurred that began the universe and the original evolution of the universe. Supposedly, according to this fairy tale theory that is propagated by Tier 2 science, allegedly all the matter in the universe was contained in an area about the size of a dime. Then in a massive explosion, this blew all of the material out into the cosmos, and it expanded for billions of years, and then the galaxies formed, and the stars, and then people. So at any rate, but it had some little problems. And I pointed that out on a show, probably a half a year ago, and I pointed this out many times to the scientific community in scientific sessions that I attend regularly. I said, okay, now as we get bigger and bigger telescopes, and we look so-called farther and farther back in time, as you look out farther with the telescopes, it takes time for the light to get to us from that object. So the bigger the telescope, the farther you see, so the farther back in time you are seeing. I said, okay, now that we're getting telescopes that are allegedly looking back to the almost the beginning of the Big Bang, then as you see those galaxies and galaxy systems at those high redshift in other words, very close to the Big Bang, they should all start to conglomerate into one very centralized location in the universe, because that's a short time after the Big Bang. They should have all been in the same spot, right? Well, now I guess they're changing that a little bit. They realize how ridiculous it is, because as they look out with bigger and bigger telescopes, they are seeing the high redshift galaxies in all directions. So now they're saying that the Big Bang happened, but that we should no longer think about it as all occurring in one little spot, but that all of a sudden, magically, all the matter in the universe appeared, and so there was kind of like a Big Bang in the whole universe, and all the galaxies just appeared where they are now. I read this, and I just about couldn't contain myself. And here's the exact quote. The Big Bang did not happen in a single point of space as an explosion. This is this past week this was written. And it says, it is better thought of as a simultaneous appearance of space everywhere in the universe. Now, obviously, this contradicts the entire point of having a Big Bang. Because when astronomers first started looking out at galaxies and recognized that they were distant, and they noticed that all of the galaxies had a redshift, which meant, according to special relativity, they were all moving away from us, which would imply expansion, which, if reversed, would reverse back to some point in time when all the matter was in one spot, allegedly. Well, there are so many contradictions with this concept that it's not funny. But the latest one, they obviously had been listening to what I'd been saying. Obviously, I'm right. And so now they added a little piece to it also. They said there was a dark age after the Big Bang in which there was no light. How convenient. By edict, in this fairy tale theory, they've added a new little piece saying that there was no light. And why would they add that little piece? Because they know that as they look out farther and farther and find galaxies with higher and higher redshifts that are farther away, that they're going to be scattered all over the universe, all in all directions. Meaning that the very point of the Big Bang, that as they look out, the Big Bang original objects should be conglomerating or noticed or viewed in one small region of the universe, but they're not. So they have to add another fairy tale to the original fairy tale. When I saw that this week, I could hardly believe it. At any rate, one more topic here, and it deals with locating asteroids. NASA has an assignment that says by the year 2020, it should have tracked, I get dropped from Tower 3, Jim McKenna here. Okay, sorry about that, folks. We had a power outage at the Nashville station, I was just informed, so Anyway, I will go back and pick up what I was talking about when the power outage occurred. At any rate, NASA has an assignment. It's a government-induced assignment, stating that they should track 90% of all deadly asteroids by the year 2020. And they apparently are not on track to accomplish this. So far, they have spotted about 12,000 objects. And at any rate, that is a what I would consider. I know a few of the people that work in that program, and it's a good program. It, of course, we all know that asteroids can collide into Earth, but it is not the whole story. And NASA also has some secret programs that are looking for our good friend Planet X. So it's just a very interesting way of throwing some misinformation, kind of a curveball at the public, thinking that NASA is out there, due diligence, looking out for our best interests, when the real story is regarding Planet X, the most serious damage done to this planet throughout its history, and this has happened many times, has happened by objects that never hit Earth. They went by, it's what I call action at a distance. The large objects that can come into the solar system can do far more damage to Earth by simply passing by than the asteroids, the small asteroids that might collide with Earth. Also, it's hard to say exactly what the probability is. The probability of a large planet coming into the solar system is pretty small, although there are thousands and thousands of them out there. And that's part of the reason for me giving this three-part series, is to clarify a lot of these topics. But I found it interesting that NASA would report this past week that they are short on their goal of identifying deadly asteroids. But as I said, that's only a small portion of the story. NASA, in fact, is vigorously looking for Planet X-type objects. And by the way, they're not looking for round, solid objects out there. They are looking for hazy, fuzzy clouds of water vapor. The satellite that they have launched, something that is generally not known about with the general public, is looking for large, fuzzy water clouds at the far reaches of the solar system. And the reason they're looking for large, fuzzy water clouds is because these objects, especially the large ones, when they come into the solar system, start to discharge the solar capacitor. They are then surrounded by a cloud of water vapor primarily. It could also be nitrogen or hydrogen or other clouds that surround them, but primarily the water vapor is difficult to see through, and so it hides a Planet X-sized object. So they're very difficult to see. So they don't really see the Planet X-type object itself. All they see is a big, fuzzy ball of water vapor out in the far distant solar system, and they're very difficult to detect. And detecting their motion is even more difficult. But once you find one, then you can start probing it with infrared and other types of technology, other types of telescopes, to identify and locate the source, in other words, the Planet X-type object. And we know from NASA reporting that they have actually located thousands of these objects around the solar system. So the concept that I, and this is something that they actually learned from me, I kept pounding on the fact that there are many of these objects out there. There's not just one. But the disinformation that goes to the public is trying to convince you that there's just one Planet X object, and that allegedly it was supposed to come in 2003, and since it didn't, there isn't any. So go home, don't think about it anymore. That's the scenario that was given by the disinformation crew. That information ploy failed, largely due to my operation on this radio show and informing the public and through my webpage. But I just wanted to point out this article, the way they present this, the NASA falling short of detection goals for locating dangerous, deadly asteroids. That's the kind of tier two garbage science they throw out to the public. Now, just one more article occurred this past week, also relative to Planet X type topics. This was from the BBC, was released. Astronomers have discovered around a distant star, they have discovered a planet, a large Jupiter-sized planet, that rotates in the wrong direction, called retrograde. In other words, Jupiter, for example, the main planet, the largest and primary planet of our solar system, rotates around the sun in the same direction as the sun's surface rotates. So the sun's surface is rotating in one direction, and Jupiter goes in that same direction. In fact, all the major planets in our solar system go in that same direction. So to find a star where there's a retrograde major planet, in other words, that planet is moving contrary to the direction that you would expect if all the planets formed at one time, that's a bit of a contradiction. But, of course, they try to gloss it over. But the main point is that now you have the possibility of planets colliding. And very interestingly enough, this past week, NASA also released a little video. It was kind of back page news, but I was able to dig it out. It occurred on space.com. It was an animation. It was only about a 15-second animation, but it was done by NASA animators, and it said, a distant star system when planets collide, and it showed two planets. Of course, in a distant star system, it could never happen in ours, where two planets collided, and they showed this massive cosmic collision, and then the two objects kind of merged into this molten ball of volcanic goo. But isn't that amazing? After 50 years of ridiculing Velikovsky, whose main book title is Worlds in Collision, NASA releases on space.com an animated video called When Worlds Collide. Is that interesting? Now, what on earth could they be thinking of? What on earth is NASA thinking? But as I said, this is what I call the creeping crud. This is NASA slipping in little pieces of information, and then in another year they go, oh yeah, we've been talking about this worlds colliding thing all along. It's part of our standard research. It's part of our standard model. So isn't it interesting how that's what I call the creeping crud? So anyway, that apparently coming out at the same time when the astronomers announced that they found a retrograde major planet moving around another star. So, Planet X, does it exist? Do many of them exist? Well, of course, that's the entire topic. There are the entire concept of how solar systems form, the entire concept of how galaxies work, the entire concept that solar systems do not form at one time. This is something I've been promoting, and of course, NASA has been wrong all along with all of its basic theories, what I call the axioms of astronomy, and now they're trying to piecemeal, grab a little piece here, grab a little piece there, and pretend like they've been working all along with worlds that collide. Isn't that amazing? So you can probably do a Google search and find that. I located the video on space.com, and it's called When Worlds Collide. It's, as I said, a NASA animation. And, gee, if that isn't right out of Velikovsky's books, I don't know what is. On to the main science topic. Let me see if I have any other announcements. Oh, yeah, a couple quick things. There were no sunspots this week, again, making this probably one of the longest stretches in history with no sunspots. The Hurricane Bill in the Atlantic somewhat fizzled. It's probably going to create a little wave action up on the North Carolina coast, but basically, like the other two Pacific storms, Vitmo and Guillermo, I think, is the other one in the Pacific, and they're both moving northwards. A very, very weak hurricane season, and just the name Bill tells you something. We are on the letter B, and of course hurricanes are named by the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and by the end of August, which we're at pretty much right now, we should be well into the middle of the alphabet in naming tropical storms. But we are at B. Bill is the letter B, the second letter of the alphabet, and so the only other storm was that Claudette. Was that, I forget the one that was in by the Florida Panhandle last week. But it weakened and dissipated almost overnight. In fact, I don't believe it should have ever been named a tropical storm. It should have never received a letter category as a tropical storm. It looks like Noah is grasping for straws here. But the point is, an extremely weak hurricane season, and that's what I said at the beginning of the season when I did my annual hurricane prediction. I said this will be a pretty much a nothing year. Noah, of course, said this would be a tremendous year for hurricanes, hoping, as with a Las Vegas bet or something, that there would be a big hurricane season. And, of course, they don't have any theoretical basis for saying that. But on to the next topic. We had a himicane. That's a term I use for overland hurricanes. We had one in the Midwest this past week. You could see it rotating just like a hurricane, and brought with it a lot of tornadic cyclonic activity. For the second time this summer, I spent a little time in the basement, and as the tornadoes actually touched down in the Minneapolis area, the sirens were going off, and people en masse headed to the basements. There were three touchdowns right in downtown Minneapolis, or very close to downtown Minneapolis, with minor damage. Nobody seriously injured, from what I understand, but a little bit of property damage. But that was a fairly large storm system, a himicane moving across the northwest, and a good deal of water coming with it. Let's see. This also I better announce. The Air France, I did a number of special shows dealing with the Air France Flight 447, Rio to Paris. And I believe it was June 1st that it went missing over the Atlantic Ocean, right about over the equator. It's still being implied that it went through stormy weather. I did a number of shows on that, explaining why there was no stormy weather and that could not have been the cause of the accident that day. But at any rate, today, officially, the search teams ended their search for the black boxes and the remains, the wreckage of Flight Air France Flight 447. And, of course, they were looking in all the wrong places. That's a long, complicated story. They were looking far north and to the east of where the plane actually went down, as I explained on both my webpage and on the radio shows at that time. The plane obviously made a large, about 50-mile radius banking turn to the right and headed back, and was about halfway back to Brazil when it finally went in the water. And there are good reasons for understanding all of that. I'm not going to go into all of that detail again tonight, but just the announcement that the official search for the black box recorders on Air France Flight 447 has ended today, August 20th, 2009. On to the topic, continuation of last week's show. And by the way, if you did not catch last week's show, you probably want to listen to it and pick up the topics that I went through last week. And of course, those are available on the website, jmccsci.com, short for jmccsci.com, just seven letters, jmccsci.com. All the radio archives are there. But make sure you listen to last week's show if you did miss it, the live show or one of the re-airings of the show. So on to the continuation, misconceptions about Planet X and the many Planet X objects. And tonight I'm going to take a little bit of a twist, because historically we have been handed a tremendous rich amount of information relative to an event. And I'll talk a little bit about the Aztec mythology. I'll talk about the Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament, and all of the information that has been handed down to us. I'll talk about the story of Moses, the great flood, the pillar of fire as the Israelites were taken out of Egypt, moved across the Red Sea, and then passed into the Sinai Peninsula, where they spent a good deal of time. These are historical events. The path that Moses followed is very well known. He ended up on Mount Sinai at the southern tip of the Sinai Peninsula. That's a very well known place. The actual location where he climbed to get the stone tablets that later were carried as the Ten Commandments was on Mount Sinai. These are historical events. The burning bush, the pillar of fire. And all of these are related to a very specific incident when Venus the comet came through the solar system. Now, it's the same event that caused the Great Flood. It's the same event that caused the Mayans to talk about Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the sky. But tonight I'm going to concentrate a little bit more on the Aztec mythology. Of course, the Aztecs came later. They were the largest flowering of their civilization was actually when the Spanish came. They were just about at their zenith. But to the Aztecs, Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the sky, was a secondary deity, but he still held the same characteristics as the Mayan version of Quetzalcoatl, and that was he was the god of wind, rain, and the recreation of man. Now, notice it's recreation, because man existed before the Great Flood, before the Great Conflagration. And all of these events, whether it's the Israelite tradition of Moses, whether it's the Old Testament revelations, whether it's Noah and the Ark, or whether it's the Mayans on this side of the earth, whether it's the Tibetans who survived high in the Hindu Kush while all of this was coming down, later blossomed into that large population center over there, or the Chinese, the very ancient Chinese. All of these brought forth the same story of a large object in the sky. That's where the flooding came from. That's where the tremendous earth-shattering events came from. But the point with the Aztecs, they carried these traditions long, thousands of years after the actual events. And they very carefully characterized Quetzalcoatl as the god of wind, god of rain, and regeneration of the human race. And that's very important because just about the entire human race was lost during that period. That's what Velikovsky was talking about. The point Velikovsky made was that all of the calendars during that time changed, which meant that Earth's rotation changed. Its polar orientation changed. I've spent a deal of time surveying in what we now call Latin America. In the field, with surveying equipment, with old maps, with a lot of information that has been compiled over the years, and just the other day, this is an example of how misinformed the public is. A woman that I know does quite a bit of traveling, and she said she wanted to go down to Chichen Itza, the Mayan site at Chichen Itza, and watch the solstice when the sun would come up and you would watch it's the spring equinox when that happens. The sun comes up in the east and you can see as the sun rises the movement of a snake-like shadow along the Great Pyramid at Chichen Itza. And what I'm telling people is that that pyramid is facing in the northeast-south direction of the old grid work of the old city. It was rebuilt upon the old city, and it actually lies about 13.5 degrees off of true north, east, and south and west that we use today, the celestial poles of the earth. So if you go down and you actually survey the site at Chichen Itza, you will find that it has absolutely nothing to do with the current coordinates of Earth. It was built or rebuilt on the old city coordinate system. So that just gives an example of how modern archaeology is out of touch with what happened back then. The fact that, and that's just one field, geology, archaeology, the study of history, the study of religion, has all been marred by the fact that modern science does not buy this idea that Earth had a great catastrophe about estimated within the past 4,000 years, certainly within the past 10,000 years. And by the way, I don't put dates on this. I don't put, because it's very difficult to put exact dates on calendar. Study is a very complicated branch of science, and there are too many people running around today making claims about the Mayan calendar who have no idea what the Mayan calendar really means. The Mayan calendar evolved out of a calendar dealing strictly with the cycles of Venus. So people running around today saying that it predicts 2012 and December 21st, 2012, and that's when the Mayans predicted the end of the world, has absolutely nothing to do with the Mayan calendar. So there again, a lot of the misinformation that's coming out is planted misinformation, and there's a lot of susceptible people out there who can jump on an idea, try and grab it so they can sell a couple books. But the point is that the real history of the Mayans, of the Aztecs, of the Israelites, of the Tibetans, of the Chinese goes back to a major event where the world axis shifted by about 35 degrees. The old Laurentian ice cap was the old North Pole. It was on land, so it was much larger than the current polar cap, and the tremendous glaciation that occurred on Earth occurred at that time. Siberia was a much more moderate climate. It was much closer to the equator at that time, prior to the pole shift. There's a misconception that when a pole shift occurs, the north and south pole of Earth flip. That's totally incorrect, because what happens is due to a gravitational wave, as these large objects come by, and Earth has done this on many occasions, where its polar, its celestial pole, the rotational pole of the Earth, has switched, but it has not flipped 180 degrees with the South Pole. In most cases, it's a very small, probably 20 to 30 to 35 degrees, as in this last case, a few thousand years ago. That's why the woolly mammoths in Siberia were found with undigested tropical plants in their throat, but they were standing flash frozen in 10 feet of Siberian tundra. How does that happen? That's not just a little accident. That's not something the Earth did by itself, but that's what standard science would want you to believe to corroborate their story that the Earth has never had a major incident with another large celestial object passing by. That's why they will continue to feed you in the newspaper, in the science literature, and on the internet websites that feature NASA science. That's why they will continue to present this idea that, oh, asteroids, we're studying asteroids, the little things that could cause calamity on Earth. Well, that's a little piece of the story, as I said. They never touch on the real story, the big story, the idea that a Planet X-type object could come into the solar system and devastate Earth without ever colliding with Earth. Those are the issues. So you can see how every day, standard science is infiltrating the public perceptions in trying to pawn off this second-tier science, bad science, onto the public. Now, right now, I'm looking at a map of the path of Moses. And so I'll just go through that a little bit. And remember, these are historical events. They're well documented. They were in Egypt. And, of course, we all know the story about how Pharaoh let them go and then went and got them back a couple times. And finally, the devastation was all around the this is when the large comet was probably getting fairly close to Earth. And Pharaoh was somewhat superstitious and thought it was because he was not letting the Israelites go, but also he had no ability to control anything. And that's a very interesting aspect of this entire story, of the Moses story, that Pharaoh tried to contain the Israelites until the very end. He felt that he owned those people, and how similar is that from the situation we have today in the world, where the owners of the world, the banking situation, feel that they own the public, that you should be, that you are like a commodity to them, that if they tell you to get a shot, you should get a shot, that if they tell you you should lose your house, and this is just a normal economic cycle and your family is put out on the street, that you should just accept that. The governments of today, that if they want to impose a national health care system on you and control your health life, that you should just bend and do this. So it's exactly like the situation with Pharaoh and Moses, where the Pharaoh thought he owned them as slaves. And of course, they were enslaved by the same exact methods being used today, economics, the economics of fiat money, interest, phony wars, and phony taxation, and that will get a population every time. It's an ages-old technique. And isn't it interesting that the old texts that came out from ancient history, the Qumran, the Old Testament, are very specific on interest? Why would the Old Testament talk about the interest or the way interest should be dealt with banks? That it should be a usury fee, not compound interest, not credit card interest, a simple usury fee. And that is all. That's, all of this came out of those times. Why did that come out of those times? Because the Israelites were enslaved by the same technique. They had lost everything. But isn't it interesting that due to a Planet X type of object, actually, it was a large comet. It was Venus, the comet, which eventually became the planet Venus, which the Mayans called Quetzalcoatl, which the Aztecs called Quetzalcoatl, which the South American natives at that time that were in the South American U.S. called it the Phoenix. All of the nations had their name for that object that came through the solar system, and on two occasions, 54 years apart, we know that from the Mayans, the large comet Venus passed by Earth a second time, giving it a second very deadly blow. But it was Pharaoh that thought he owned these people and didn't understand that this was a natural event. And also, let's look at the creation of all of the religious beliefs that came out of that time. Also, let's look at the fact that every effort has been made in modern times to extinguish those traditions. They treat Moses, Noah, they treat the Aztecs, the Mayan, and they treat them as if these were mythologies, some kind of fairy tale, some kind of Chicken Little fairy tale. Oh, it hit me on the head, but it's just a fairy tale. So you see why all of this misinformation, this curveballs, I call them, like the announcement that NASA is behind on its goal of locating deadly asteroids. Okay, that's an important story possibly, but they certainly do not talk about the big story that NASA should be out there looking for the big ones, the Planet X type objects, and in fact they are. So why don't they announce to the public that NASA is doing that? Because they don't want to instill fear in the public. If the public knew in mass that NASA was out looking for these objects, then it would become clear that NASA believes in those objects. So what do? NASA hires third tier, tier three failed astronomers to have blogger web pages with a few Trekkie followers, and they make claims that there is no Planet X, that it's a jovial idea, just some ludicrous idea of some wacky people. And that's what NASA's response is, while NASA, behind the scenes, is vigorously, actively looking for Planet X-type objects. They've already discovered thousands of them. Are they telling the public? No, they aren't. In fact, I have a little list here that I drew up. Let me take a look here. Here's one of the questions I wanted to ask and then explain. Will NASA or professional astronomies or the government that pays their freight ever tell you if they see a Planet X-type object coming into the solar system that would have imminent disaster effects on Earth? Here are the four top reasons why they will not tell you. First of all, peer pressure. Because the public perception is that NASA doesn't believe in Planet X, that it's a funny idea, that it's only crazy people believe it. They also spent a lot of time setting up a big disinformation campaign based on a woman who claimed to talk to aliens and that Planet X was supposed to come on May 15, 2003, and of course it never did. But that's the extent these people will go to set up a misinformation campaign to try and fool the public, to try and cause the public to move away from these concepts, and also to tell professional astronomers, if they talk about it, they will be classified as a nutcase, they will lose their funding, they'll lose their ability to use equipment, and that's the second pressure that they have on astronomers, that they could lose their funding. They could lose their right to equipment time, and that's the only thing that keeps them going. It's the only thing that keeps a paycheck coming into their bank account and keeps their kids going to those nice colleges where they go to school and, you know, keeps the mortgage paid and keeps the wife supplied with all of the things that she needs and keeps the family going in their retirement. So why would an astronomer risk all of that and tell you the truth about a Planet X type topic when they know all of those things would happen to them and they would lose their voice in the community and be looked at as a quack? And then the fourth top reason, and the biggest one, is actually all of these astronomers, when they sign up for government grants, when they sign up for government funding or use government equipment, they sign an agreement. It's basically a gag agreement saying that they cannot talk to the public about anything they discover unless it is first authorized by the release agencies. And there are a couple major ones around the country. I don't know if you remember a number of years ago, it was about a year and a half ago, a couple of us of scientists spoke up about global warming. They said, we don't believe in this global warming stuff. It's a bunch of junk. It's junk science. And those scientists then wrote some reports. The reports were edited. They were censored. And then the scientists complained. And I said right on the air, I said, what are these scientists complaining about? They signed agreements turning over any right that they have to give an independent opinion to the public. They signed that away when they took the government money, when they took their grant money, when they got the ability to publish under grant, federal grant money. They gave up their right as an independent researcher with an independent voice. That's why I've never had anything to do with these people, never will, because they are owned. They are owned lock, stock, and barrel. That's why professional astronomers, that's why NASA, that's why all of these lovely ABC government alphabet soup agencies will not tell you a thing if they find out that some kind of object is coming in towards Earth. In fact, I've even heard that the information from the asteroid search program has now come under military rule. In other words, if an asteroid were imminently plotted to be in a direct collision course with Earth, they would not tell the public. So, once again, the question, if an imminent disaster from space were to befold on Earth, on planet Earth and its residents, would NASA, would independent astronomers or people who think they're independent astronomers, really they're not, work for universities that use government equipment, they all use government equipment. Show me one astronomer out there that doesn't have some equipment that isn't partially funded or in some way funded by the government or their university job, their funding at the university, somehow related to government funding. Those people have no ability to walk out and say anything on their own. So, absolutely, they will not tell you, the public. Are there safe zones or safe areas where you can go if a Planet X-type object were to come into the solar system and have some imminent destructive capability for planet Earth? The answer is no. There are some places that might be a little bit safer than others. You probably don't want to camp out next to the seaside. That's a good bet. 95% of the world population lives near the ocean. Would you want to go to the highest mountain peak? No. Probably not a good choice either. Would you want to go into a deep cave built by the government? No. It would be a terrible place to go because when these things start rupturing, the water tables will break into those underground caverns and everybody will be drowned. So a deep cavern cave system that are typically cut by these large circular tunnel drilling devices, those are terrible places to be. You would want to be relatively close to the surface. Remember that Moses, remember that Noah, remember that the Indians of the American Southwest, the Mayans, the precursors to the Mayans, the ones that lived thousands of years ago, they all lived through this, many of them living right on the surface of the earth. Remember that the Tibetans, the Chinese, they lived in the highlands. They survived without cave systems. There were places on Earth we know that there were cave systems, and probably a lot of people survived in those. But is there a specific safe area? Well, like I said, there are places you don't want to be. You don't want to be in a government camp. You don't want to be in a place where somebody's trying to stick a needle in you from the government. You want to be able to take care of yourself. You want to have a supply of the ability to clean water. Usually, having water is not a problem. Having clean water is the problem. So that's why I sell the water filters. I'm not going to talk about that a lot. Of course, those are on my webpage. But the point is, people... I was looking at an article the other day about the Amish people. And they are very independent. They grow their own food. They save their own seeds. They are very much in the cycle of nature. They use natural, organic methods of gardening. And they, from the article I read, their populations have doubled over the past couple decades, which means they're highly successful. But it also, it's a group like that that would be successful in case of any major disaster. I've done a lot of talking about the GMO, the genetically modified seed stock, and how the big companies like Monsanto and Cargill want to control the seed so that the public does not get rejuvenating seed stock. In other words, seed where you can grow the plant, save the seed, and then plant that seed the next year. So there's a lot of work being done in the background to prevent the public from taking care of themselves. but a few groups out there are actually succeeding, and it's very interesting to see that the Amish are one of those groups that are ignoring modern society. They don't go, they don't have medical treatment, they don't get shots. As when their kids grow up, they're healthy, they're, you know, they eat good food their entire life. And sure, there might be some with medical problems, but they are a healthy stock of people. And if there ever was a group of people who have a chance of living through one of these major celestial catastrophe events, it would be the Amish. I would give them my number one vote. So preparation is important. Understanding and doing all of the things you would have to do beforehand. There are a lot of people who think, well, I've got this and I've got that, and I'll run to the store just before something major happens, and then I'll be okay. That's really not true. That's one of the biggest misconceptions that you could find regarding survival or taking care of yourself. And in a lot of cases, it's not a case of survival. It's simply a matter of taking care of yourself, keeping your wits about you, understanding, and as I said many times, just doing what you've always been doing. So if you've been involved in gardening, if you've been involved in sourcing your own water and making sure you have your own source of clean, fresh water, if you are saving your own seeds generation after generation, you have a very good chance of riding through economic problems, political problems, that type of thing, man-made problems, or if something, some natural event occurs, you would have a good chance there also. Remember in the mid-1800s, when a mountain volcano that erupted, Tambora, I believe it was, and there was a mini ice age for about a 2 or 3 year period. The grains were not harvested. There was starvation all over the world, and these kind of events could happen any day. Not that they would, they're somewhat rare events, but every couple hundred years we do seem to have a major volcanic event, and the clouds spin around the earth and cause the sunlight to be blocked, and people are not prepared. A friend of mine was talking the other day about the Great Depression. The majority of people that starved to death during the Great Depression were because they simply didn't know what to do. They walked out into the countryside and stood there until they died, didn't even know what they could eat out there. And that's our population today is very similar to that, totally unprepared to take care of themselves. So join me next week as I continue the topic of the many misconceptions dealing with the topic of Planet X and the many Planet X objects. And one thing I've noticed, I just have a second left here, the people who take care of themselves are much happier. I've really noticed that. They have a smile on their face, and they seem to be comfortable no matter what happens in the world. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.